everyone, and welcome back to All Things Teen. So I'm very excited to have our special guest today be Kristen Getson. Kristen, tell everybody what library you work at and where exactly that's located.
Sure. So I work for Fraser Public Library, and that is located in northeast suburbs of Detroit. So if you're familiar with Detroit, it's between Roseville and Sterling Heights. We're literally four blocks by four blocks. Wow, I can't talk today. So y'all are in for a treat.
Yeah, I always like that, like when you explain it, because like I think people have an idea of where it is, and especially our patrons in like Clinton Township and Macomb Township. But because I live in Ipsy, I'm like, wait, where exactly is Fraser? So you do have a really small service area, mm-hmm. but what kind of things do your teens like to read? Are there certain genres or?
Ooh, so my teens are really into new books. So very much into what is new and upcoming, just coming out. Though we do get a lot of teens that come back for our fantasy series. We've got quite a few fantasy books, and we're always looking for new fantasy books because that is my particular little geek heart love, is fantasy and sci-fi. So I'm always on the lookout for really good fantasy books. But I know that we've got quite a few teens that are looking into Firekeeper's Daughter right now, just Michigan connections, and it's, you know, it's on the bestsellers. So of course they're going to be looking for that, but we've got a lot of teens interested in fantasy, though I do have a few that are now getting into the mysteries, which is fabulous.
I've noticed lately with mysteries, like it's hard to find like detective fiction for teens. Like there's more like thriller suspense type mysteries.
It is. I will tell you, that's one of the hardest things to find is the quintessential detective novel. There is no Sherlock Holmesian type of detective for teens. It's mostly things like Truly Devious, which is more of a suspense mystery type of novel, but it's less detective work and more things are happening to this character and she needs to react, as opposed to, there's a mystery to solve and I need to work on solving that. So
yeah, it's more like Pretty Little Liars 2.0 with all of these book series. Like there's all these secrets happening and all these twists and turns. The one detective one that I can think of, I mean, there's a couple, but it's like a lot of it involves supernatural things like that. Like I just found about this series called Jacoby, where there's this woman who helps Jacoby, who's kind of like a Sherlock Holmes, and it's set in like America, and she's from England, but it's set in America in, you know, the late 1800s, early 1900s. And that one's interesting. If people are not like, you know, into historical, then I wouldn't really recommend it. But if you do like historical fiction and mysteries, then I'd recommend that. And then the other one, there is like a Charlotte Holmes series, but I will provide a warning with this. I have only read the first book, but it is intense. It's not, you know, if you're in middle school, you might not want to read it yet. There are like some very, there's like sexual assault in there. And so it's, there's like things that you might not care to read. It might be upsetting, especially for younger teens. You're not okay with reading something like that, but it is very much a mystery series.
And that one is more of like the quintessential detective mystery. I agree, that is a very intense book. I got about halfway through and I was like, okay, I'm setting you down for a little bit while I go read something completely innocuous. Because it was dealing with a lot of topics that I was not expecting this book to deal with, which is both good and bad. Because I was not expecting it. So cool, you're dealing with a topic that I was not expecting, but bad because I was kind of hoping for like a fun romp through a mystery and not dealing with sexual assaults and other topics of that sort. So
yeah.
Yeah.
I think graphic novels and mysteries have been really interesting. I've been following a lot of that. And
we have a lot of graphic grade novels.
And in like high school. Mm-hmm. So if you guys want recommendations, come visit us and we'll give you some. Have you read Firekeeper's Daughter?
I have not. It's I just got it.
Okay. So I can do a quick plug for that just because it is fantastic. It's set in Sault Ste. Marie, which always cracks me up when like people outside of Michigan try to like pronounce cities in Michigan and they just horribly mess it up.
They horribly butcher our Michigan towns and cities in places.
A lot of it's French based because we had a lot of French settlers, and my ancestors are from France, but I don't think they originally settled in Michigan, but
I can tell you no. I learned Spanish in high school and then I went to try and learn French, and I learned very quickly that I can speak French with a Spanish accent, and it sounds very wrong, people. It is not a good experience. So I don't try and even correctly pronounce French words anymore because I know I'm just gonna butcher it.
I try, but you know, like I never really learned to. I mean, I can definitely tell a French accent. There's certain accents that are very like obvious. Distinct. To me, but like, yeah, distinct, like British, and I can actually detect a British versus Irish versus Scottish. Welsh is kind of like, where are you from?
Welsh is kind of like British 2.0, but also mixed with Scottish in there, so it's like a toned down Scottish, but also, it's very strange.
Yeah, I had a tour guide once when I was touring around like the UK, and she was like, yeah, I have a British mother and an Irish father, and I could hear like hints of her British accent and her Irish accent, which makes sense because that's what she was like, you know, raised with both accents. So it was very cool. I was like, I kind of wish we have that Michigander accent, I guess.
Yes, apparently Michigan has an accent, though in my opinion, it's the absence of an accent.
Yeah, I think so too.
Personally, but at the same time, I've heard people say, no, you have a distinctly Michigan accent. How is that different than any other Midwestern accent? Like, how is this different than Indiana?
Because that's the interesting thing is like, like Minnesota definitely has a distinct accent.
Right.
But I think most of the Midwest pretty much all sound like this. Mm-hmm. And when they try to teach newscasters, they try to teach them like a Midwestern, like broad accent.
Which I find hilarious. I find it absolutely hilarious. So apparently we have the accent that is the easiest to understand out of every accent in America.
Yeah, which I like that because then like when I actually watch the news, I'm like, okay, these people sound just like me. I have no trouble in understanding what they're saying. So that's really interesting. I actually kind of want to talk to a newscaster about that. Like somebody preferably that's from somewhere where they had an accent and they had to change it.
Especially like, if they were from like the deep South.
Yeah.
Super rural deep South with a very thick twang. Mm-hmm. That would be very interesting. Or a very distinct New York accent, maybe.
New Jersey.
I wonder if they can turn it off and turn it on.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be really cool. I was always really interested in like, oh, like maybe I should narrate audiobooks. Like I would love that. Like I love listening to them but I don't know if I can really do a lot of voices. So I'm like, oh man, does that mean I just have to read nonfiction?
You'd be surprised at how many voices in quotation marks you can actually access. It just depends on how you pitch your voice, because for a child, usually when I'm doing story times, because I do story times for the little kids too. If it's a kid, I'll do a very high voice because, you know, kids' voices tend to be higher when they're younger. Whereas if it's a really gruff old man, it's, you get the idea. So it's easier when you actually start like putting a personality to it. But yeah, I find it very interesting. Voice acting, I find very fascinating. And like actors who can like turn on and off accents, I can't do that. That is beyond me. So it's like the coolest thing ever when they can like turn on this really thick Cockney accent and then turn it off instantly.
So yeah, cool. Absolutely. Definitely. I think I'm like pretty poor with accents, so I would have to pretty much use my Midwestern accent and read titles. Oh, like I'm listening right now actually to Baby and Solo.
Oh, okay.
And it's really, really good. And listening to the audiobook, and the audiobook is great. And it's set in, the main character is originally from Virginia, but he moves to Michigan. So like the, you know, the reader sounds like he lives in Royal Oak, which, so that is a really cool, because if you know the area, like they keep talking about the Main Art Theater. And I was like, I've been there so many times. Like I went to see Rocky Horror Picture Show there. And like, you know,
one of my favorite things to do during Halloween.
Yeah, absolutely. So I thought that was really cool. It's like I was probably gonna do a recommendation at the end, but slip that one in there. But
back get that to little bad boy in daughter. There right now.
That's set in Sault Ste. Marie. That is actually a mystery too.
Right.
There's a lot that happens in that book. It's about a main character whose father is a native tribes person, and he's like out of the picture now. He's died, and her mom is not. So she's like half, and she doesn't always feel like she fits in with her native relatives, but she doesn't feel like she fits in with like her white relatives either. So there's always this like othering on both sides. And she has a stepbrother basically, or like half brother, from her dad. But he is a native mother. So he already fits in. And so they generally have like a really close relationship. And so there, all these things are, she's going to go to U of M the next year. And, but then her grandmother is very sick, and she kind of wants to like, okay, maybe I'll stay around and help my mom out and, kind of figure out my life after this. So mm-hmm. It's really interesting. There's like kind of this whole conspiracy, and like there's drugs on the island, and there's a whole mystery with that. And, there's a couple, deaths, mm-hmm. that they don't know, like who's responsible for. So it kind of has like almost everything that you want in a book. There's just like a small side romance. Like it's not funny. That's the only thing. It's not funny, but it's really interesting book. And I love like all of when everything that they talk about, all the islands around there and the scenery and everything. That's like, I love that so much. They talk about like the flora and fauna is kind of important in this story. Mm-hmm. So talking about that and the kind of plants that we have growing in Michigan, super awesome.
I love anything that has like those little tiny Michigan connections that you can find. And you're like, oh, that's so cool. I know what you're talking about. I just wonder, the people who read the book that are not from Michigan, I wonder if they realize exactly how far away Sault Ste. Marie is from U of M.
Yeah.
Because that's like a huge transition.
Yep.
Moving from Sault Ste. Marie to Lansing, Ann Arbor area. That is insanely large transition. So I don't know if they would get that connection.
Yeah, the population, like, you know, everybody in Michigan knows like it's so much more of a remote location. You don't right. have like the population density that you do in especially in southeastern Michigan. So
exactly,
it's like, oh, well, and wake up call.
And I wonder if people understand that, or if they get curious and they're like, I wonder where the University of Michigan is located, because I'm one of those dorky people. I'm like, I wonder what they're talking about when they're talking about this island. And then I'll go like Google it and
Me you too. Know, I always Google have to do like research on the books that I'm like reading. If I learn something about, especially if I don't know anything about it, I'm like, wait, I want to understand how this ties into the book.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially if it's a large section of the book or they devote a lot of time to that particular thing. I always try and do a little bit of research because it's like, obviously this is important to the author because they wanted to include it. It's important to the storyline because it's a huge part. So I always try and do at least a little bit of research. Maybe I don't, you know, fall down the rabbit hole, but I do a little bit of research.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was telling my dad about some research that I did. I wish I could recall exactly what it was regarding. I'm sure I'll come up with it. I know. It was actually in a show that I was watching. I was watching this Thai drama, and the main character was going to become ordained as a Buddhist monk. And I was like, okay, how does this happen? I just needed to know all about like the process and how long like you are a monk for. Because that was the other thing. Yeah, like he told his partner, like, don't propose to me until after I'm back from the monkhood. And I was like, wait, how long is that? And so I did a lot of research and it was very interesting that honestly it can be weeks up to like a year. In the show he did 3 months, but it was really cool to see that culturally, like what they do. And I guess a lot of men do this, and like you have to shave your head, there's a celebration, and like, you walk them to the monastery and you present them with the gifts of only the necessities they're going to need. And then a lot of times family will visit every weekend and present them with gifts. Like that whole thing, I was like, wow. Like, yeah, I had to think more about it.
That's not a prevalent part of our culture, at least in Michigan and in the Detroit area. It's not a huge prevalent part of our culture. That is really interesting, though. I always find it very fascinating when you're talking about religions that are not similar to what you grew up with, and finding the things that are the same and the things that are very, very different. I always think that's super cool.
Yeah.
But again, I'm a dork, so yeah.
No, I mean, literally, like, my bachelor's degree is in anthropology, so my favorite thing is, like, learning about other cultures. Like,
I know.
If I could just travel the world, if I could get somebody to bankroll my adventures, and if I could just travel the world and, like, write about it and learn about cultures all over the world, though, I would completely do that. So
okay, so hashtag life goals. If anybody watching this is a millionaire, please bankroll us and we will go explore the world and do podcasts about the different cultures that we find.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, because you got to take me with you. Like,
I will.
You have,
I definitely,
to take me with you.
I love it. I like want to try the food and learn so much
food.
Oh, that reminds me. So this, I don't know if you're familiar or if you watch these kind of people on YouTube, but one of my favorite videos to watch on YouTube is this guy called Zalma. And he's a white American guy, but he fell in love with Chinese culture, and he is fluent in like Mandarin. And he can speak Cantonese, but he lives in New York, and he would go out to restaurants and he would start talking to them in English, and then he would start in flawless Chinese, and they would be like shocked, like, what? This guy speaks really, really excellent Chinese. Like, where did he come from? And some of the people are like, wow, like, they didn't believe that he was American. They were like, wait, you weren't born in China, things like that. So I love watching him. Like, if I could have a superpower, it would be like to speak all of the languages in existence.
Wouldn't that be amazing?
Yeah.
Even the dead ones. I want to speak even the dead ones.
Yeah.
Because I think that would be flipping awesome to be able to go to a different country and instantaneously communicate with these people. Languages are not my forte. at all.
Yeah. I know. I'm so envious of people that can do that. So he's like fluent, I think, in English, Mandarin and Spanish. And then he can speak a lot of other languages, bits and pieces of them. Mm-hmm. So, and I think his Cantonese is pretty good too, but he like learned like a little bit of Korean in a couple days, and he tried that out, and he'd learn like these African languages only spoken by like certain tribes in Africa. Whoa. Yeah. And so, I was like, this is the awesomest ever. So
I thought for sure you were going to say it was like a cooking show or something, because we were talking about food.
Well, he does like, so, oh, there was a time where like he took his Chinese friend with him, and they just ran into this guy who's Chinese too, and they like made him come with them. They're like, we're gonna go to Yelp's worst rated Chinese food restaurant, and it got like 1 star. Nice. And so they went and they tried out the food, and they only found like one thing that was like edible in like the entire restaurant. But that was really fun. So he does eat a lot of food, and he talks about a lot of food too. So mm-hmm. I'm sold. Languages and food.
One of my recent YouTube obsessions is there's a gentleman who takes recipes from really old cookbooks. Like we're talking like 1860s up to like the 1400s cookbooks, and tries them out and tries to make them, and then does like a taste test with them. And I'm like, that is so cool. I want to know what an 1800s cake tastes like.
Yeah.
Cause they didn't really have a whole bunch of sugar at that point in time. So what does it taste like? Is it sweet? Like we're used to sweet being, or is it like a savory cake?
I love that. Sure. Like then you're having all of this unprocessed food, like how food used to be.
Right. It's really cool. It's really cool. It's funny because his wife comes in like always at the end, when it's time to taste, and she's like, oh, you made some food. Good. I'm hungry. That would be kind of amazing to just like randomly wander into your kitchen and someone has just made this cake recipe from scratch from like the 1800s. You're just like, okay, cool. Food. Thanks. I would love that.
Me too. Absolutely. That's life great. Goals. Do you remember the name of the channel or the guy?
Oh, I'm going to have to look him up. I'll look him up while we talk.
Sure. About yeah. I'll, in the captioning, well, it's Zalma NYC, but as the guys in Zalma, if I'm spelled this correctly, hopefully is XIOMA, I believe. I'll definitely. Okay.
Yeah, and I'll have to look for him. But I fall down YouTube rabbit holes like you wouldn't believe.
I do too. And about like really random things too.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Because they'll be like, here, you just watched this video on cheese making. Here's another video that's sort of similar. And I'll be like, ooh, okay. Cheese making. Yeah, definitely.
I have to tell you. So it's really funny because recently I was traveling and I was kind of like noticing how teens were using YouTube and like Instagram and things like that, and I watched two different teens, and both of them did this, and I was amazed. They go through it so fast that they like don't even really watch anything. Or like this girl, she would watch like the first half of every video, and then she would go to the next. And I was like, what is happening? I was wondering, is this an attention span thing, or is this like they need to consume as much media as possible, so they keep going very quickly. Like, and I watched this guy scroll through Instagram, and the way he was scrolling through it, he was like not even looking at 90% of the feed. And I was like, to me, that doesn't make sense, because I only follow people whose feed I want to look at. So like, I scroll a lot slower because I actually want to see what's up. I mean, every once in a while, I look at like an ad or something like that, but. That was like mind-boggling to me. I was like, oh my gosh, like they're consuming so much media so quickly.
Wow. So the gentleman's name is Glenn and Friends. So okay. Glenn and Friends Cooking. But like, I just find it so fascinating because he'll show you the old cookbook he got it from.
Mm-hmm.
And like, these things are falling apart, man. You can tell they're like super well loved, have been used like millions of times. And I just, that's so cool. It's just so cool.
That is very cool. Well, so I gave a recommendation. Do you have anything that you've read recently that you want to mention?
Anything I've read recently?
I mean, recently can be in like the last 2 years, let's say.
Okay.
And do you have like a really good like fantasy book or fantasy series?
One that I'm going to recommend is called Illuminae. Have you read it?
Okay, so I've only read the first book, so I've been meaning to read the other two. I actually listened to audio, and the audio is really interesting. And I think
I highly recommend, while the audio I'm sure is really interesting, read the book on this one. Like, you actually want to get the print book for this one.
Mm-hmm.
Because the author did something super cool. So the story of Illuminae, it's a sci-fi, you know, typical story. But the story is pieced together based off of leftover documents from the time that they're talking about. And it's video clips that they're transcribing what's going on. It's emails, text messages, things like that. And the way the author has the pages laid out, it makes you look like you're looking at a transcription or things like that. It's so cool the way they did.
I had to look at the book after I'd listened to it because I was like, how does this look? And it was really cool to look at it. And like, things are formatted like that. So it's interesting having it like read to you too. But I definitely going to finish that series. I started, so that is by Amy Kaufman and Jay Kristoff. And they have another series that they co-wrote together. Book 3 is coming out very shortly. Aurora Rising is, I believe, the first book. Yes. And that actually was our hot read when it came out that summer. So, so it's 3-book series, just like Illuminae. And she also writes, Amy Kaufman also writes other fantasy series. She has a series with Megan Spooner, which I don't really remember the title off the top of my head, but that looks really good. That's fantasy. Jake Kristoff, his stuff is by himself, is like darker.
Yeah, and I've read some of his other book series and it is very dark. It's very dark. So if you're looking for something super broody, go for Jay Kristoff by himself. But if you're looking for more of a sci-fi fantasy romp, you want to do the two of them together.
Yeah, and it's funny too.
Oh yeah. I mean, they did a great job with that book and then that subsequent series. It's super funny. It's very easy to get addicted and hooked on the story because I gotta tell you, that's one of the things that I have a problem with is I've got so many books that I need to read or want to read. And if you don't catch me within the first 30 to 50 pages, I'm sorry, I'm moving on.
Yeah. I definitely agree with that too. I used to be one of those people that could never abandon a book. I was like, I have to read this. And then as soon as I joined a selection list committee, I was like, you know, I have at least like 200 books for this committee that I'm going to be reading. If there was something that, like, if it was amazing audiobooks, if I listened to it for an hour and I couldn't get into it, no, it was gone. And I was like that with, thankfully, graphic novels. I can generally force myself to read the entire thing, but then like I will be angry about it afterwards if it wasn't any good.
I get really annoyed when the graphic novel doesn't have an art style that I appreciate, or if the art style is very off-putting from what the story style is. Mm-hmm. Like if your art style is very angular, but you've got this great romance story, it's really hard for me to get into something like that because it's like, it's very jarring. It's not what you're expecting. So I'm a little picky with graphic novels, less so though, because you're right. A graphic novel you can read in an hour and that's it. Whereas most books, they're 300 plus pages, an hour could be 30 to 50 pages. But it's, again, if you don't catch me in those first 30 to 50 pages, man, I hate to say it, I've got other things to do.
Absolutely. I have such a long to read list.
Mine is insane.
So many things waiting on the list that, like, I need to be ready and move on.
I just picked up another, it's a new fantasy, and I just picked it up not too terribly long ago. It's called The Gilded Ones by Nomina Forna.
Yes, I love that book.
Did you love it? Okay.
Did, yeah.
I'm about a third of the way through right now because, you know, I've got other things to read for book clubs and stuff. So I have the problem that...
I liked how it is like on the sly feminist book, which I love.
Yes.
But it's great fantasy, and it's honestly, I've been really digging all these like fantasies with Black authors and of like African ancestry. Like, it's so awesome.
I love the multiculturalness that's come out recently when it comes to fantasy series, because that's not something that you've seen a lot. And so the fact that we've got authors of different races and cultures and all sorts of people writing about different races and cultures incorporated seamlessly into a new world is amazing. And I'm eating that up like you would not believe, because it's a different perspective. And I love when I get a new perspective, because I've read enough books in my life that there are times when I pick up a book and I start reading and I'm like, I've read this before.
Yeah.
I've read this exact book before, but I know I haven't, because I know I haven't read this author. I know I haven't read this particular book because it doesn't sound familiar in that regard, but there's so many plot lines get reused so frequently that it's really hard to find a new perspective. And we're very lucky in that in the last, probably year and a half, it's been really prevalent. And I love it.
Yeah. It was really funny when I was reading the second book by an author who's I read the first book of, her debut. And this is like identical to the other book. Like, this author also writes about like lesbian girls that live in of color that live in Ireland. And I was like, what? Is this a new trend? And then I was like, oh, it's the same author, Erin. Like,
oh,
I was like, that makes sense now. And I think, like, I'm pretty sure she's it's like in Own Voices, and the fact that she is a woman of color that was raised in Ireland and is queer. So I was like, that's really cool that she's incorporating that into like her writing about teens. And it was really interesting. Honestly, it was kind of driving me crazy, because it was set in like this like religious school, and all of these horrible like Karen type girls were there, and I just was like, this is the worst ever. I hate this so much. Like,
oh man,
I can't imagine going to like school in Ireland, and especially if you're of color, and like surviving that.
I mean, it's bad enough to be female and to be in school. I can't imagine being of color or different sexual orientation or any of that. That has to be so difficult.
Yeah, definitely. I was kind of, I don't know, I was thinking of Dairy Girls a little bit, but like I kind of had to abandon that too. I don't know. Like,
I did too. I watched the first couple of episodes for it, and I was like, okay, this is a cute idea. I don't know if I can watch it anymore.
Yep. That's exactly how I felt too. And now I no longer feel bad about abandoning things. So
No. You get to a point in time when you've read 50 of the same plot line that you're like, okay, I know exactly how this is going to go. Next.
And I think that's why I'm so much pickier too about what I watch. Like I read so much that when I watch something, it's because like I don't have the faculty to read at that point in time. I need something I can just put my eyes on. And even if it's like a storyline I have to follow, like it has to be engaging. So there's so many things people recommend and I'm like there's only like, I don't know, 3 or 4 series on Netflix that I actually watch that I'm like looking forward to the next season of. Super picky.
No, I'm the same way. It's either that or it's something I've watched a million times because it's innocuous and my brain doesn't have to think of it. Yeah. And I put it on as more like background noise while I'm like playing a video game on my Switch or something like that. Mm-hmm. And yeah. But
so the last thing I wanted to mention, well, do you have any like programs that are really popular at your library? And then we can do a plug for our collaborative program that we do.
So we did, this was kind of like a one-off, but the week of Halloween, we did a full week of programs of every night there was a different program. And that was insane, man. it was really good because we had a ton of people, but it was crazy sauce.
It was a lot of like craft type things.
It was a lot of craft stuff. And then we did story time. And then we did, then we had the trunk or treat on that Saturday. We had an animal guy come in and he did like creepy crawlies. So he did like spiders and snakes and cockroaches and all of the animals that you kind of associate with Halloween. So he came in and did a program about that, which was really cool. And I got to hold a chameleon and I was very happy because I love them. They're so cool. And I'm a weirdo. Yes, it's true. but that one was really popular. And so we're going to be doing something again next year because it's going to be just look again in Halloween at Fraser Public Library. We're going to go absolutely nutso. It's going to be amazing.
That's great. And can like non-residents come to your programs?
Of course. Yeah. Anybody can come to our programs. I don't care if you live in Wisconsin. If you want to make the trip to Fraser Public Library to come to my program, feel free.
Yep. Absolutely. And if you live in Fraser, you can come to Clinton Macomb Public Library programs.
Right. Exactly. It doesn't hurt that we're all a part of the Suburban Library Cooperative, but yeah, you know, definitely. Beyond that.
That makes easier. And that makes us also reciprocal borrowing. So meaning if you're not familiar with that phrase, we can go to each other's libraries and check out materials also.
Which is amazing because even though we have a lot of graphic novels, we don't have the number of graphic novels that Clinton Macomb has. Mm-hmm. You guys have an insane number of graphic novels.
We do, and we just keep buying more. Awesome. So honestly, the problem now is space. We actually did create more space for graphic novel, well, more so for manga at South. And then we have some more space at the New North branch, but it's always kind of a space issue because we need to buy new materials, and which means unfortunately we have to get rid of our older materials, things that have checked out in the last couple of years to make space. But that's my least favorite part of the job, but yes. You know, you got to do it.
I think it's everybody's least favorite part of the job is going through and
especially
getting rid of
if it's
old
a good
materials.
Book. If it's something, actually, that's my favorite thing to do. Is like we're going to be doing Blind Date with a Book again this year February, and I always try to. I'm like, okay, what's the lowest circulating book? Okay, is this something that I'd recommend to somebody? Yes. Okay, then it's going in Blind Date with a Book, and hopefully, it'll get checked out.
We do that too. And you would be surprised at the number of books that go off that shelf.
Oh yeah.
Blind Date with a Book.
People
it's
love
really
that.
Fun.
So
it's
this
really fun.
Keywords. We're actually doing one sentence, sentence descriptions, and I'm doing all.
Oh
of
yeah. That's what we do. We do one sentence descriptions and we'll give you like a general genre sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So we'll give you, you know, like, hey, this is a fantasy book, you know? And then we'll do like a one sentence description of it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. And we do it in brown paper and we put the sentence description on the front so that you can see it. It's really fun. It's really fun. Yeah. If you've never done date with a book, I highly recommend it because mm-hmm. it's a great way to read new authors that you've never heard of before.
Absolutely. And you might fall in love with a book that you choose. So. And if you hate it, then you're like, okay, I'm never reading anything by this author ever again.
And that's okay too, because if you hate it, at least you know never to look for that person again.
Exactly.
There are a few authors that I just cannot stand their writing style. So I can't do it.
Yeah. All right. So we have this collaborative program that we do with a few other libraries. Kristen, you want to tell us about our game night that we have?
Sure. So the first and third Thursday of the month, we do a collaborative joint board game night via Board Game Arena. So that's an online system that you log into. You got to create a free account, but you can play board games with other people in Board Game Arena. So we set up tables for our players and we get teens from across Michigan who come and play board games with us, which is really kind of awesome. So first and third Thursday of the month, and it's always at 6:30 p.m. so that, you know, you can get dinner beforehand or after, doesn't matter. But we do a lot of board games. And there's always new ones on Board Game Arena too. So, you know, if there's a new game that you see and you're like, oh, this would be really cool, just let us know. We're more than happy to test play a game and see if it would work really well. Coup is the favorite by far.
Yeah. I really like Just Desserts. I've played Sushi Go for so many years, so like it's so easy to play.
Yeah.
And actually, my first game night, I taught the teens how to play Seven Wonders. That's a little bit of a challenge, but like for first time players. But once you understand it, you can actually play really quickly.
Yeah. Ink and Gold is my other favorite. And that's just because it's not competitive with other players. You're competing against the card deck essentially. So it's a push your luck sort of game. So yeah, you're trying to get more points than the other players, but you're not actively like ruining their day by, you know, stealing things from them. So I like to push your lucks mostly because I'm awful at them.
Yeah. I don't.
Oh, I'm horrible.
I won like all of the games of Seven Wonders and I'm like not surprised because like I have strategy, and if you're new to the game, you are not going to have a strategy. But I told everybody, I was like, yeah, no, if we were playing with my sister and her husband, I always lose and she always wins. Anton's usually always in second place and he's a very sore loser, but that's her game. She's just a genius at that game. So
yeah. That's why I like the push your luck kind of games. I mean, I'm awful at them because I will always, always try and push my luck, or I make the worst decision possible and go back before everybody else. But because I'm awful at them, I think it's fun to see exactly how horrible I can be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How many you can points have can I come away
with yourself? Be like, I'm going to see how bad I can do.
Oh yeah. I do that all the time. I'm like, I am going to try and do the worst I possibly can.
Yeah. Well, that's about all the time we have for today's podcast. I want to thank you so much, Kristen, for being our guest. Of course. And being very lively and cheerful. I appreciate it.
This is my normal bubbly person, you know, personality. So
this is
y'all
true.
Like if it, come Kristen visit me
in person. Yeah. You will get the same.
It's true. You will get the same bubbly, happy personality. I am a very happy person.
All right. Thanks very much.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.